Take this area of documentation a bit further and talk about some of the work that we've done in trying to look at the impact of conflict on the health system and specifically on the doctors in Iraq. And I start off by saying I have no financial or other conflicts of interest in this. So let's talk a little bit about migration of doctors. This is an area that both Amy and I have been interested in for some time, and I think we're continuing to look for opportunities to collaborate on this. But the data that exists on migration of doctors is a bit thin on the ground. There are many kind of anecdotal accounts of what's happened in various situations, but the hard data is really missing. But what we do know historically is that perhaps 50% of the doctors in Cuba left following the revolution, many of those coming to the United States. Records from Zimbabwe show a large number of the doctors from educated in what was very good medical educational system in Zimbabwe left during the 1990s. Someplace between 2,000 and 8,000 left following the revolution in Iran at the end of the time of the Shah. Clearly not very good data on that. There's a lot of migration that occurred in Lebanon, although the only clear data that exists on this are graduates from American University of Beirut, but traditionally they migrated anyway. They migrated in much bigger numbers during the time of civil war in Lebanon. Somalia, virtually all the medical officers in Somaliland and probably the rest of the country as well left during the serious conflicts there, although there's still a medical school in Mogadishu and is still trying against many odds to produce graduates. We do have some evidence about Liberia. Large numbers of doctors there left, so there were less than 20 there in 2003. Now, the number of doctors that left Iraq is virtually impossible to get from regular sources. And in fact, we've had several approaches from the Iraqi Medical Association said, can any of your data tell us on or what's actually happened to our members, because we can't really keep track of them. There has been, as many of you know, a regular assassination program against academics, and a group in Belgium is trying to be tracking this. And they have figured between 300 and 400 academics have been killed, and that's just kind of anecdotal data. While Amy and I were working on a project with one of our colleagues, the dean of his school was assassinated with a sticky bomb, which is now a common way of assassinating people. Many more people have left because of ethnic or religious groups. When I was in Erbil not too long ago, one of my colleagues at the Red Cross was saying, last week there were 1,000 Christians that had arrived from Baghdad into the northern part of the country. If we look at the issues of young graduates, almost none of the young graduates are interested in staying behind in Iraq. Everybody wants to get out for various reasons. There are a few Iraqi doctors that have come back. We don't understand the reasons for that. There are a number that have stayed behind through really difficult situations, and we don't really understand what those issues are that kept people behind, many of whom were qualified and actually turned down employment opportunities in other locations. We don't understand those kind of issues either. And I think if we did have a better understanding on this, we could look at how this information could be used in the future in conflict situations to encourage people to stay instead of to migrate from where they'll probably never come back. So we did a couple studies. One was we looked at 12 Iraqi tertiary hospitals, and half of these were university hospitals and half of them were general hospitals. And we looked at them in the four cities over a period of time through 2007, and the reference in social science and medicine is there at the bottom. Then we also carried out a series of interviews with 400 Iraqi doctors in Jordan using respondent-driven sampling. And we stopped at 400 because that was both our budget and our sample size, but we could have gone on a bit beyond that because there were a large number of Iraqi doctors in Jordan, and we looked at their personal experiences. So let's talk a little bit about the loss from hospitals and the specialists. At one time, before the most recent conflict, Baghdad was thought to have about half of the medical doctors in Iraq. although it has about 20% of the population. During the period of time that we traced from 2004 onward, the total number of specialists dropped from 1243 to 1166. This was for the whole country. And then in Baghdad in specific, there was a decrease to 78% of those at the beginning of the study. Interestingly enough, there were some other areas that increased, and areas such as the north and also around Basra increased the number of specialists at the tertiary hospitals during this period of time. So this is what it looks like by year. The annual loss of doctors, the red line, is Baghdad. And so you can see at the peak of the violence in 2006, Baghdad hospitals had lost 29% of their tertiary specialists, where other places the loss was much smaller and, in fact, was able to be replaced by new graduates and by migrants into the area. If we look at loss by specialty, in Baghdad we see a pattern of all specialists, surgical, non-surgical, and other practitioners lost, while gradual increase in other parts of the country. So some of the loss was internal migration, but a lot of the loss was outside the country. This is what we found as best we could why people left. Now, some of the issues with people departing from the hospitals in Baghdad was suddenly they would disappear, and nobody would know what happened. And then maybe 6 or 8 months later, the hospital would receive a request, can you transfer my employment records to Basra, to Erbil, or to some other location? Or they would receive messages that we're now in Syria, we're now in Jordan, and so forth. So some of this information wasn't really clear, but we could collect a lot from colleagues and from hospital records. So basically, the majority transferred to other hospitals. Some died, some left because of threats, and we documented a violent rate of about 30 per thousand during the period of time. And until 2005, hospitals could replace their losses of tertiary specialists. Then we carried out this survey in Jordan with the 400 doctors that was just published about a couple months ago. And there we used respondent-driven sampling, we used cell phone for interviews, and we used 6 seeds, and we followed these seeds through their various contacts and so forth. And so this went up to about 5 or 6 waves in some of the recruiting processes. 43%, so the largest number had arrived in 2006. And, of course, this corresponded with the most serious time of violence. And nearly two-thirds had left because of some associated violent experience, and three-fourths had some violent experience in their household since 2003. And it's interesting that older people, particularly more well-known doctors, tended to be threatened more than the younger ones, and many that had moved initially to Baghdad and then moved on had a much higher rate of violent experiences. So this is what we worked on. We also got information on how many doctors were in their facilities by years, and how many were killed, how many fled, how many had kidnapping events, and so forth. So we could work out a rate per thousand, and this is what it looked like. These were violent deaths per thousand, again, peaking at 2006. This was the rate for kidnappings per thousand. This was the rate for violent injuries. This is among doctors, not family members, in the specific facilities. So then we looked at what was the consequences of this. So what were the kind of the health consequences of doctors migrating and being exposed to violent events during this period of time? So we looked at the number of doctors that, or the number of official medical officer positions that were unfilled. And the dark line is kind of the 50% line, 50% of people above this and 50% below. So you can see the number of facilities and the number of vacant positions in facilities increased dramatically. So 2006, it looked like there were probably only 30% of positions that were filled. Then we ask about things like availability of functioning equipment in your facility. So you can see in the beginning, 2003, the numbers were fairly good. 80% was kind of the level at which the half of people said, well, we had functioning equipment. And that dropped dramatically to 2006, where only less than 40% of equipment was functioning. Then in 2007, when violence dropped a bit and efforts to improve equipment came into line, we saw an improvement in that area as well. We ask about availability of essential drugs. Did you have what you needed to be able to carry out services? And indeed, that followed the same pattern. Then we looked at issues of violence, again, following the same area. We're asking about how often violence, the admissions were due to violence, and you can see that by 2006, close to 80% of people responded that almost all the admissions were due to violence. And then we asked something that tried to look at quality of care. We asked about complex procedures being carried out by untrained or partially trained or inexperienced people, and that became a huge issue, reflecting this migration pattern as time went along. So we also finally ask about future plans. What were your plans to do for people outside of Iraq? Well over half wanted to settle in another country. Some wanted to stay in Jordan, but the opportunities to work in Jordan were reduced except for some of the older doctors who already had licensure there in the country. And the rest were a bit undecided about what they were going to do. Some thought they might want to go back to Iraq, but that was not a common response. Those who had been outside the country for more than 2 years were not surprisingly less likely to return. Those who had a lot of family still in Iraq were more likely to think that they might return to Iraq in the future. Again, not really surprising. So just to finish this up, there's been a major loss of human capital, and our kind of informal discussions, Amy and I, recently, is that young graduates are still interested in getting outside the country. The ministry has tried to control this by not issuing transcripts and so forth to other places, but people still find a way to get out. The quality of health services, I think by all accounts, has dropped since 2003. Replacing this human capital lost is a huge undertaking. A few other things we've seen is, in general, morale remains low in the system, and doctors in the system perceive that rebuilding health services is not a major priority of government at this time. So these are kind of some of the recent kind of views on things. I might just add, as a follow-up to this, among our interviewers in Jordan, we had six young Iraqi graduates that did our interviewing. Four of them are in Texas and two of them are in New York right now. And I know from working with them personally, they're going to greatly enrich the health systems in both of those places. So
why don't you take questions?
Yeah, so we'll take some questions, yes. I think that's a very good question, and that's something that Amy and I have talked a lot about. We haven't actually found the opportunity to carry out this study, but this is what we want to do. We want to look at who's returned and what are the circumstances that caused them to return, and who have stayed through it all, and young graduates, what is it that encourages them to stay? Now, the government has taken a couple stabs at, if that's the right word, at trying to retain people. One of them was to increase their salary. That may have an effect in some places. And then there was a parliamentary law, I think a year and a half ago, which allowed doctors to carry guns. It didn't seem in our brief discussions with doctors that was going to make much difference. So I think that's an important thing. Probably the most important thing for retaining medical personnel is a feeling that there's a future in the system, and the feeling that there is a serious concern about rebuilding the health system. And there have been at least one paper recently on the importance of rebuilding health systems to build general population morale in post-conflict situations, and I think that would even more apply to hospital situations. I think also ways to recruit at least some of the migrant faculty to come back in the medical school, at least for short-term periods of time, in instruction would be another area as well. Bob.
Robert, I wonder if when you and Amy get to that study, whether you should explore some of the things that have looked at geographic maldistribution in our own country and the things that make it difficult for doctors to stay in rural areas, especially when they're needed, family concerns about social, cultural, and employment opportunities.
That's a good point, but I think we get bogged down. We'd never get out of... the U.S. in that question, but that's an important...
I spent 15 years doing rural health in the United States before I went on to this sort of work, so I definitely know what you're talking about, and I certainly think there are lessons learned.
Yep, and I think there are other good examples of how countries have approached this, and one of the surveys that we just finished, and hopefully will be published fairly soon, is looking at perceptions that patients have in the catchment areas for health facilities. And clearly, doctors in the primary health care sector in Iraq are often working on their own with no other doctors and sometimes no other professionals. So that's a very demoralizing situation. And the distribution in the country, at least for primary health care personnel, seems to be governed very much by family locations and by security concerns. So if you have a lot of family in an area, and a third factor is there an opportunity for private practice? And if you can do private clinics out of hours and there's an unmet need in that area, then that will attract doctors to various locations. So a number of these issues. Yes?
Any studies related to migration of nurses or other?
That's a very good point. And the answer is no. There have been some reports of pharmacists leaving the country and an insufficient number of pharmacists remaining behind. Nursing has been a huge problem in Iraq forever. And many, like Libya, many of the nurses were really expatriates. The nursing education system, I think there may be one school that teaches at the college levels or graduate levels, but nobody else does this, and there's a real kind of prejudice against nursing in the area, and this has been identified over and over again as a major area that needs attention. And I think I don't remember the numbers specifically, but I thought at one point the numbers tended to indicate there are actually more doctors in the country than nurses. So there's a major challenge. And Afghanistan's exactly the same way.
Take one more question.
Okay, one more question here. Well, actually, that's a question that Amy and I have had, and I think it's worth pursuing this a bit further. One of the patterns that we've seen is that Iraqi doctors, the older ones, tend to move a lot within the Gulf area because there's kind of common, some of them have common accreditation, the curriculum is almost homogenous across these areas, and so it's much easier to fit in. All of them have been trained in English, so it makes it very easy. There are data on where Iraqi doctors have gone in the past. I don't know how up-to-date it is, but the UK has been a major recipient, partly because of historical reasons. A large number in the US, Australia is another, I think, major recipient. The younger doctors would tend to want to come, at least as we understood it, to the US, Australia, and UK, where their training is more up-to-date. They feel that their ability to pass exams is much greater. Okay. Thanks.